A few days back, I came across this article from Sahara Reporters that says how Buhari's government killed Shiite leaders Elzazaki's three sons, sister with Saudi support. Then I dove into the article because there's so much misinformation in Nigeria. And upon reading the article, I am not fully convinced about Saudi support or no Saudi support, but I found something which was heartbreaking. So upon diving in, I started to find out more about who the IMN is, or who the IMN are, especially the IMN members in Nigeria. And before long, I came across heartbreaking contents of murder, of gross human rights abuse, of death and destruction, contents that showed how much power the Nigerian military possess, and how they are willing to use that power on the innocent, how they are willing to use that power on the poor, how they are willing to use that power on the people that they are supposed to protect. Yes, the Nigerian military is brave in its own accord. It is a very brave body. They face Boko Haram, they face one thing or the other. Yet, there is nobody without fault. I'm not talking about a human. There is no institutional body without its faults. But the faults possessed by the Nigerian military, at least these faults that I'm about to point out, is not one that should be possessed by a military of good standing, a military that was created for the purpose of protecting a citizen, a military that should go to war to protect its people. That military should not be the one slaughtering its people, killing its people, suppressing its people due to the orders of one or two leaders, due to the hurt feelings of one or two persons. It should not be that way. Hundreds of people should not die because one person is offended. Hundreds of people should not be killed because of their religious beliefs or stance. Hundreds of people should not be murdered because they dare to show resistance. I don't know how to put this. If a person is not as powerful as you, then why do you need so much force to keep them silent? Why do you need so much force to suppress them if a person is not as powerful as you? If you have all the weapons, if you have all the guns, if you have the strategic insights, if you have the experience of war, that experience of war should not be used on the innocents that do not have that same experience. The innocents, the people of the country, funded that knowledge gain of yours. The people of the country, they are tax, even if they are poor and they do not pay tax, they contribute. They are members of the community. Even if some of them are poor, not all, they contribute. They are members of the community. They are full members of the community. They are Nigerians by blood, by birth, and by anything in which a Nigerian can be defined a Nigerian. Hence, they should not be murdered. They should not be killed. They should not be killed like animals. They should be protected. And I'm not just talking about IMN members and the kinds of material I found about their murder and the cover-up. I'm talking about the military's action since the inception of Nigeria, from the time that they started taking over the government to the time that they left the barracks to come on the streets to bring the most violent times we've ever seen. Yes, they also brought, to an extent, they brought certain calms at certain time, but something cannot be 100% bad and 100% good. Nothing is. But this particular bad attribute of theirs is what needs to be addressed. The killing of innocent Nigerians. It is not acceptable by any standard. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International has called upon them on important events in certain times to stop their killing, but they do not. Between 12th and 14th December 2015, more than 350 people were unlawfully killed and buried in mass graves by the military, following a confrontation between members of the Islamic Movement of Nigeria, IMN, and soldiers in Zaria, Kaduna State. The origin of the clash appeared to have been a demonstration on Saturday, 12th December 2015, by members of the Islamic Movement of Nigeria, on a major road near Zaria, blocking the motorcade of the newly appointed Nigerian Chief of Army Staff, General Tukur Burutai. The sites were known to occasionally mount makeshift roadblocks on the main road, which runs past the IMN headquarters in the PZ area of Zaria. The roadblock did not close off the road completely, as vehicles are observed driving through unhindered. According to residents of the city, the practice was not unusual. IMN supporters were in the habit of temporarily blocking vehicular traffic to secure the movement of IMN leader or to secure the site of IMN events, especially in the Gailisu neighborhood, where the IMN leader lived. Though illegal under Nigerian law, such practices had been tolerated for some time and had seemingly come to be considered as acceptable by IMN supporters. They, however, appear to have underestimated the potential consequence of refusing passage to the Chief of Army Staff because of the bloody events that followed. In a television interview after the incident, IMN spokesman Ibrahim Musa cited as an example a previous occasion when IMN supporters denied passage to an official without it resulting in a bloody massacre, and insisted that when denied passage by IMN members, the Chief of Army Staff should have used another route because the large presence of soldiers at Husseiniya made the IMN congregation there feel unsafe. The unsafe feeling by members was understandable due to the attack on IMN procession the previous year in July 2014, in which scores of IMN members were killed, including three of the leader's sons by soldiers. An Amnesty International report best describes the event of that afternoon on the 12th of December 2015. Hundreds of IMN supporters blocked a section of the Sokoto Road in front of IMN headquarters, a religious cultural center commonly referred to as Husseiniya, and refused to clear the roads to allow the convoy of the Chief of Army Staff to pass. There were indeed footages from the Nigerian Army given to Amnesty International, and some videos from witnesses on ground that gave a glimpse of the road blockage and the ruckus caused by IMN members. What could clearly be seen and can be corroborated with evidence was that some of those involved in this act of defiance were only armed with batons, knives and machetes. IMN members, mostly young men but also some women, are seen taunting but not physically attacking army officers and soldiers. Some army officers are seen trying to reason with the protesters in what appeared to be an attempt to convince them to clear the road. Other soldiers armed with assault rifles and other forms of firearms are visible in significant number around the officers and protesters. The video provided by the army then suspiciously cuts to the time after the Chief of Army Staff's convoy had passed, briefly showing the road cleared of protesters with some burning tires on the now empty road. The footage of the crucial moments when, by the army's own admission, some protesters were killed and wounded by soldiers who moved in to clear the road is missing from the video provided by them. It appears that after failed attempts by the Nigerian officers to convince IMN members to clear the road and allow the convoy passage, soldiers opened fire with live ammunition, killing at least 7 protesters and injuring several others. This was what began one of the deadliest events in Zaria that led to the murder of hundreds of women, children and men. Human Rights Watch Africa director Daniel Bekele said at the time that at best the army's response to the event of that day was a brutal overreaction, and at worst it was a planned attack on the minority Shia group. The disproportionate use of force by the military at that time was just the beginning. The next few days would see the army on a killing rampage. Hours after the road had been cleared and the Chief of Army Staff isn't in any immediate danger from the IMN, soldiers were deployed to locations in the city where IMN protesters were gathered, notably at the residential compound of the IMN leader Ibrahim Al-Zakzaki, located in the Gailisu neighborhood, some 3 kilometers from Husseiniya, where the roadblock occurred. There, they reportedly killed more than 100 IMN supporters between the evening of 12 December and morning. You if the inhumane clearing of the road could be justified, then I struggle to see how the murders that ensued after could be. It was clear that the army not only had the intention to wipe out as many of the shites as they could, they also were not afraid to show that they could engage in battle with innocent unarmed civilians, including women and children. Personally, leaving aside those at the top who gave the orders or refused to stop the killing, it was surprising to know that young men in uniform would take and execute such orders without remorse. Amnesty International investigated the incidents which took place between 12 and 14 December at both locations in Zaria, around Usenia and the Gale synagogue, where most of the killing took place. Witnesses and relatives of victims interviewed by Amnesty International said they had seen dozens of people being shot dead by soldiers, and dozens of wounded protesters died when soldiers set fire to a building in IML leader's residential compound, which was being used to treat the wounded and as a makeshift mortuary. There were so many heartbreaking witnesses accounts. Does this event sound familiar to you as a youth in Nigeria? You must be thinking, this tactic looks awfully similar to the tactics used by the Nigerian army in the Endsars protest, although we had social media at the time to expose some of the things they tried to cover. And you would be absolutely right, these tactics are similar in some way. There are certain constants in both events, not just the indiscriminate killing and subsequent cover-up and denial. The president and chief of army staff at both events, both Endsars and this particular event, are the same: Buhari and Burutai.
General Atiku Yusuf Burutai is a retired Nigerian Army Lieutenant General who served as the 24th Chief of Army Staff of Nigeria for 5 years and 6 months, the longest anyone has served in that position till date. He was appointed by President Muhammadu Buhari in July 2015, just a few months before the massacre of the Shites, and he resigned in 2021 because of months of outcry by Nigerians, including National Assembly, demanding his sack due to the deteriorating security situation in the country. Premium Times reported that the over 5 years that Atiku Burutai used as Nigerian Chief of Army Staff may have been characterized by some success, a few successes against Boko Haram, but it was also filled with massive extrajudicial killings of hundreds of Nigerians by soldiers under his watch. One of such killings is the massacre of the Shites. Whenever he is questioned on such events, he usually stands firm that the army followed its rule of engagement, leaving people wondering what the army's actual rule of engagement is, if that rule of engagement includes killing innocent civilians and turning the nation's ground into a slaughterhouse. Burutai was immediately given an ambassadorial role to Benin Republic after resigning from his position. A Sahara Reporters news piece claims that this was in a bid to escape corruption investigation being brought against him. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch carried out a detailed investigation after the event. They also took eyewitnesses' testimony. One of such witnesses named Yusuf, a young man who was shot and seriously wounded, who also managed to escape. He gave the following testimony to Amnesty International. "Those who were badly injured and could not escape were burned alive. I could not help anyone and had to leave them behind. I could not walk because of my injuries. I managed to get away from the fire by crawling on my knees until I reached a nearby house where I was able to hide until the following day. I don't know how many of the wounded were burned to death, tens and tens of them. There was also a room full of dead bodies and more dead bodies in the courtyard. They too were burned in the fire. Residents of the neighborhood who are not IMN supporters and who expressed their particular dislike for IMN members told Amnesty International that around 10 p.m. on 12 December, soldiers with heavy armored military vehicle took position at the top of a road leading to Ibrahim Azazaki's compound, where hundreds of IMN supporters had barricaded themselves behind makeshift roadblocks and were taunting the soldiers. This was after the initial roadblock in the afternoon of the Chief of Army Staff, and after a couple of them had been killed. Residents explained that they heard gunshots intermittently through the night and part of the following day. Residents were then ordered by the army to leave the area. A resident gave Amnesty International this particular testimony. "There was shooting. At times it was more intense, louder. I never heard so much shooting. You couldn't go out because you could be mistaken for one of Zagzaki's people and got shot." These particular events led to a few days of rampage by the military, about 3 days of rampage by the military, in which a lot of people were killed. And at the end of the day, Zack Zaki and one of his wives were captured and put in prison. Till this day, they've not been free. A couple of judges have tried to set them free, but the Nigerian government never fails to bring a new case upon them. Cases upon cases upon cases on the leader and his wife. Till today, IMN supporters still fight for the leader's release. During these events, when all these onslaughts were going on, an Iranian reporter or an Iranian official managed to place a call to Zack Zaki when this event was going on. Let us listen to the call and what Zack Zaki had to say when this event onslaught began.
Okay, right now we are under siege. For the last 12 hours they are shooting. And they kill in my house. They have destroyed our house in here with the heavy bomb. And then they are now shooting my house. They are shooting the wall right now. Yesterday in the night around, it is now almost 10 hours, 11 hours to be precise. They came here around 10.
Yes.
Started shooting all through the night. Up to now they are shooting.
Where are you now?
I am inside the house.
They are shooting at the house that you are staying in?
Yes.
So your life is in danger there?
Well, there is nothing I can do except Allah alone can deliver me, because there is no way out. They have already put the whole house in siege from every corner and they are shooting.
Inshallah, we will try to do our best there. How many people has been killed? You don't know?
Well, in this house, they kill about 14. In the Hussein here, they kill everybody there. And
how?
We don't know the numbers. And we don't know the number they killed in Hussein. And they took some alive and killed them. They are about 30. By now, we don't know whether they killed them.
It is sincerely not clear why the army launched such a military operation in response to a law and order situation, which could and should have been dealt with by the police, and why the military resorted to using live firearms against unarmed protesters without any attempt to use non-lethal crowd control means. The Kaduna State Police Commissioner told Amnesty International that he had no information about the incident, which he had claimed was a pure military matter. Fatima, another eyewitness, a 43-year-old mother of four, told Amnesty International the following. On Saturday evening, 12 December, outside Sheikh Ibrahim Azazaki's house, Nuseiba Abubakar, a girl aged 18 or 20, who had been giving us slogans to chant, said she was going up the road to taunt the soldiers. She said she was willing to be a martyr. She was shot and killed as she walked up the road. She was just a secondary school student. What harm could she do to the soldiers? The following morning, I went into the middle of the road to help two girls who had been shot and were laying on top of one another. One was already dead and the other was alive. I bent down to pick the injured one who was still alive, and as I stood up, I was shot in my right breast. I was quite far from the soldiers and was not doing anything wrong, but they were shooting anybody. Video footages shot on mobile phones by IMN supporters and residents of the neighborhood after the incident showed bodies of people with gunshot wounds, charred bodies that were scattered around the partly burned down compound. The bodies appear to not be unarmed in the videos. Testimony and eyewitness accounts go on forever, soldiers picking up dead bodies and dumping them in trucks to be disappeared, which usually means to be buried or disposed of in mass graves that would never be identified. Amnesty International was able to verify at least one possible mass grave location, which was also corroborated by a government official during a judicial commission. We would learn more about the judicial commission soon. After his initial silence, President Muhammadu Buhari later suggested that during a television interview on December 30, that the victims invited the wrath of the military upon themselves by hitting the chest of generals. Did you hear that? He said, the victims invited the wrath of the military upon themselves because they were hitting the chest of generals. Apparently, hitting the chest of generals was a good enough crime to have innocent people murdered. At least that is what the former dictator, remember who he is, and the president of a sovereign nation thinks. That is his line of thought. You eat the chest of generals, well, your whole family should be wiped out. Now, let's establish a timeline of the event so you are able to wrap your head around everything that happened in the event. So, this event happened from 12th to 14th, right? So, let's begin from 12th. On 12th December afternoon, that was when IMN supporters blocked a section of the Sokoto Road in front of IMN headquarters and refused the convoy of the Chief of Army Staff from passing, right? That was when soldiers opened fire on unarmed protesters and killed a couple of them to clear the road for the Chief of Army Staff to pass. On that same 12th, in the evening, soldiers came to Senia, where IMN protesters were gathered. Not just Senia, and other places that IMN protesters were gathered, especially at the IMN leader's home, Ibrahim Azazaki. They surrounded where IMN supporters were gathered, and they shot intermittently, killing as many as they could, spray bullet and co. There were testimonies of that also. On 13 December, soldiers broke into Senia and Ibrahim Azazaki's compound, setting some buildings on fire. Especially, witness noted that the main building that was set on fire was a building that was being used as infirmary to treat those that were wounded. So, those that were wounded could not escape. They were also burned in that building. So, on 13 December, that's when that happened. Hundreds of IMN supporters were killed in the fire just because they could not escape. They were injured. On 14th December, the Nigerian Army announced the arrest of Ibrahim Azazaki and his wife, both seriously injured during their arrest. The Army also petitioned the National Human Rights Commission, NHRC, to investigate what it alleges as an attempted assassination of the Chief of Army Staff by IMN supporters on 12 December. On the 9th or 14th December, hundreds of bodies were secretly buried in mass graves in the Mando area of Zaria. On 15th December, the NHRC, who the army told to investigate, announced it would be setting up a panel to investigate the killing. On 16th December, the Senate set up an ad hoc committee to investigate the killings. On the 17th December, the governor of the Kaduna State announced the establishment of a judicial commission of inquiry. We will be finding out what this Judicial Commission of Inquiry got, the impact that they had. On 16 January 2016, the Kaduna State Judicial Commission of Inquiry was established on April 1st of that 2016, 4 months after the event. The IMN leader, Ibrahim Azazaki, and his wife were allowed to have access to lawyers 4 months after the event, 4 months after they were injured and captured. That was when they were allowed to have access to lawyers. They could have been interrogated, they could have been tortured, any matter of things could have happened to them. Our system is messed up. On 11th April, a Kaduna State official told the Judicial Commission of Inquiry that 347 bodies of men, women and children killed in Zaria incidents were buried in a mass grave in an unspecified location in the Mando area near Kaduna City on 14th December. This was the first and only admission by the Nigerian authorities of the large-scale killing. After the horrible incident, the Kaduna State government set up a judicial commission of inquiry into the incident for investigation. The time of reference for the inquiry provided, amongst other things, that it should determine the cause of the incident, to ascertain the number of persons killed, injured or missing, to identify all properties damaged during the incident, to determine whether the measures taken were necessary, appropriate and sufficient in the circumstance. The commission was also mandated with making recommendations for prosecution, further investigation or the convening of a separate inquiry, as well as on what policies might be adopted and actions taken to prevent future incidents. A copy of the report, which resulted from the inquiry, said that the GOC of the Army's 1st Division, Mr. Oyebade, deployed soldiers to carry out such a large-scale operation without recourse to the chain of command, which is surprising. It recommends that Mr. Oyebade and other yet-to-be-disclosed officers who participated in the operation should be brought to trial before a court of competent jurisdiction. The commission also found members of IMN culpable in the deaths of one Army officer, Dan Yakubu, a corporal, and recommended that those found culpable in the killing of the officer should be prosecuted. What impact into the commission and inquiries have. They had little to none. Let's discuss about the main person that was mentioned, Major General Adeniyi Oyebade, who was the GOC of the Army's 1st Division and, according to the reports, carried out this large-scale operation without a recourse to the chain of command, which is highly unlikely. Now, Major General Adeniyi Oyebade, the GOC of the Army's 1st Division, named in the commission's report as the orchestrator of the massacre in collaboration with several officers, was never punished. In fact, he received what seemed like a promotion a little over a year later, as he was redeployed as the commandant of the Nigerian Defense Academy. To be clear, the general who apparently, according to the Judicial Commission, greenlighted the operation without recourse to the chain of command, was sent to head the NDA, the nation's top military university based in Kaduna, that trains officers and cadets into the Nigerian Armed Forces, the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force. I guess the attributes he possessed and exhibited during this event is seen as exemplary in the Nigerian military, significant enough to make him the head of the military's university. John F. Kennedy once said, "The rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened." It is important to remember that every human life is sacred, and when those chosen to lead and protect declare or see certain people's lives as lesser than that of animals, everyone in the country is in trouble. Yes, we are guilty. They came for the shite and we did nothing. They came for us at Lekki toll gate and we could not do anything. We waited for international bodies to fight for us. They haven't and will not. Not because they do not care, which many do not, but because they also have their own problems, or most of them are primarily driven by their own selfish interest. To save your life, to save my life, to save our lives, we have to work as one to hold those responsible accountable. Frederick Douglass also once said, "Knowledge makes a man unfit to be a slave." This is why I find it important that we all know, so we can remember, so that history would never repeat itself. Nigeria is plagued with repeating our brutal histories, a major reason being because we haven't really grown since independence. We have only recycled the same group of corrupt, inconsiderate, and inhumane politicians. Remember that no one is safe if your neighbor is unsafe. No one is safe if your sister is unsafe. No one is truly safe if those who share different beliefs and culture as you, no matter how unlikable they are unsafe. Do not mistake this for a call for revolution. This right here is to prepare you for the future. To build a future that we're all proud of, we have to remember the past so as not to repeat the same mistakes. Wherever you are, whenever you are listening to this particular voice, no matter how bad it has gotten, no matter how many of you they have killed, remember there is always hope. Protect your neighbor, protect your country. Till our next episode, where we'll be exploring some other important events or important facts that shaped Nigeria, some other thing that we need to remember. As long as you are not silenced and as long as you've not been killed, peace and love always. Remember to protect those around you. Until then, please consider subscribing to this podcast, subscribing to this channel.